Hi, I'm John Rawling, welcoming you to Ringside Rewind, where I'm joined by Tris Dixon and Ian Dark. And we're grateful for sponsorship from Fleet UK, a car and commercial vehicle leasing company based in Hampshire, supporting our programme. Great people who've supplied customers for 20 years or more, including me. Wherever you are, they'll find and supply any car you want and work out financing options to best suit your needs. Fleet UK pride themselves on transparency, trust and fairness in every deal. And you can take it from me, they are brilliant at what they do. Just have a look and check them out at fleetuk.com.
Hello, welcome back to Ringside Rewind with me, Tris Dixon, John Rawling and Ian Dark. This week we are assembling the perfect fighter. And we're looking at different categories here. So we're going to weigh up fighters with the best jab, who had the most power, heart, defense, who had the best chin, who had the best mentality, charisma, speed, footwork, and who was the best stylist. So we're trying to create the perfect fighter. We've got it that we might well discuss someone who overlaps different subjects, but one person can't be the sort of head of each part. So you can't have, for instance, Sugar Ray Robinson winning every single department, sadly. But still, it's going to be interesting to see who we've got in which categories. I've got a few here in front of me. And we'll start off, I suppose, textbook, we'll start off with the jab. Ian, this was your subject matter in terms of assembling the perfect fighter. Jab, who've you got? Who are your runners and riders for having the best jab in boxing?
Well, I get that to, in a moment, but I've called this fighter that we're making today Faultless Freddy Fantastic. Okay, I'm playing the promoter here. I can see his name in lights in Las Vegas and on the billboards, and as they try to sell the TV pay-per-view. So to answer your question, Tris, I've written down George Foreman, Sonny Liston, Howard Winston. That's going back a bit. I'm showing my age a bit there, but he was world featherweight champion from Wales back in the 1960s. I think you have to put Hagler in there as well. I think his jab was very, very hurtful. I stood up, you know, very, very close to him the night he won the title against Alan Minter. And every jab had an enormous power in it, just the way he threw it. Leonard as well. But you know what? I'm going to give it to Lennox Lewis. That's my winner in the jab category.
Okay. John, who've you got?
Well, we're on the same script there, Ian. I think you've got to consider Larry Holmes, haven't you? He had a phenomenal jab. Yep. Liston as well. I was actually rewatching some of the old Liston fights, and he was a poor mover, which of course was why he got beaten by Cassius Clay as he was Muhammad Ali. But my goodness, he could certainly punch through a target with that left hand. Lennox Lewis, great jab. You know, you just watch that performance, for instance, against David Tuer, where he completely negated a very, very powerful puncher by nailing him with the jab repetitively, maybe some would say boringly, but he just took him apart with the left hand over 12 rounds. And more recently, I think that Terence Crawford has got a pretty phenomenal left hand. You know, you watch that lad fight, and he is so economical with his movements, with what he does. He wastes nothing. He's incredibly accurate, but all his brilliant work comes off the jab. I think he's right up there.
Well, that's great. Yeah, Crawford really dominated the Spence fight, didn't he, behind that jab. I'm very much of the Larry Holmes school of thought. I think the only one who I've really got here that you haven't mentioned is Oscar, who had a great left jab. He was, I think he's naturally left-handed anyway, but he was a guy who obviously could... He fought so many ferocious boxers, punchers, guys with speed, but his jab was seriously, seriously effective. And I saw him break up many people.
He was a complete package, wasn't he? I mean,
he was really good. Really good.
He was outstanding.
And I think because he didn't get the nod, you know, had he got the nod in those fights with Mosley and, of course, with Trinidad, I think we'd be looking at a very, very different legacy to what we've actually got. Not saying that he doesn't have a hell of a legacy, but I think it would be very different.
I think he has a heck of a legacy anyway. And I think, you know, he was the fighter that pushed Floyd Mayweather closest. That was a very close fight on the scorecards for me, on my card anyway. I don't know what the rest of you thought.
Well, he was ahead after, he was certainly ahead after six rounds, wasn't he, at the halfway stage? I think that was, you know, pretty much beyond question. And it was only later on, I think, maybe that Mayweather kind of fiddled his way back into it. But there was an argument. There was an argument that Oscar beat him, and he was an old De La Hoya, of course, by then.
Yeah.
So I think we've got three fighters there who've got two mentions each. There we've got Lennox, we've got Larry Holmes, and we've got Sonny Liston. So it's kind of pick your poison out of those three. So all heavyweights, funny enough.
But we've got to pick one, haven't we? Because we're making the perfect fighter. So
my one, if I'm going for one, since Ian's gone Lennox Lewis, I'll go Crawford.
Oh, and I've gone Larry Holmes, so we're buggered, aren't we?
Okay,
I don't really know what happens. We'll revisit that.
We're going to miss a lot of people out, aren't we, with this? We're going to miss, and apologies to anybody listening to this who's probably got some very good suggestions about other fighters, but we're talking about thousands of fighters over many, many years. So we're racking our brains a bit, but those are the ones that come to the top of our minds when thinking about these things. So we'll just have to call that one split, won't we?
Yeah, split decision. Okay, right. So we're on to power now, and I'm probably slightly less precious about this department. John, do you want to kick off?
Yeah, if you like. Well, Foreman obviously has got to be up there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, sort of you have to look at this kind of for a pound for pound sort of look at it. You know, you can't just say heavyweights, because obviously heavyweights punch harder than the little fellas. But I think, for me, in the fights that I've seen, two standouts. I think Julian Jackson was an extraordinary puncher, you know, and to be able to completely starch people of the stature of Buster Drayton, Terry Norris, and most famously of all, Harold Graham. You know, he was one hell of a puncher. And you met him outside the ring. He had awful eyesight. You know, how he was ever a boxer really is fairly stunning. And he was so quiet and I don't know, charming, gentle, a real gentleman, Julian Jackson, but by God, he could hit. And I think from a British perspective, you know, you've got to put Naz in the shake-up for a little fella in the featherweight division. His power was extraordinary. And it maybe it was his undoing in the end, because he kind of relied on power rather than the reflexes and the sheer boxing ability that he developed earlier in his career. And as he found it more difficult to make nine stones, he relied increasingly on his power. But my goodness, for a little fellow, what was he, 5'4" or something like that, Naz, he could really bang.
Ian, where are you? Who's hit your power parade?
Well, I put an asterisk against Julian the Hawk Jackson. I think he was from the Virgin Islands, wasn't he? And I was there at ringside that day when Harold Graham totally dominated him for the first four rounds. And then he found this chilling punch to just end the contest in an absolute instant. He had real lights out power. And his character is just as John has described there. But he'd be right up there, I think, in anybody's list. But you'd have to include on that list somebody like Mike Tyson, obviously, in his early years when he was a reign of terror in the heavyweight division. Another chilling one I saw that's always stuck in my memory, I was a bit frightened, to be honest, when I saw it, was Azuma Nelson knocking at Pat Cowdell in Birmingham after about 2 minutes of the fight. An absolute thunderbolt of a shot, which just put Cowdell to sleep. And that was frightening to watch. Sometimes you're kind of shaking a little bit at ringside watching that kind of power. So he'd be on my list as well. I agree with Naz, he's in the shake-up too. But I think we both agree about Julian Jackson. What about you, Tris?
So Jackson was obviously on my list, so I think he's going to be our one. Also on my list, I had Tommy Hearns, heavyweight puncher Ernie Shavers, Tyson too. I know, so Gerald McClellan was the guy that had too much power for Julian Jackson, so McClellan's made my list as well.
Yeah. What about Tommy Hearns at welterweight as well?
Astonishing! You know, when he took off Pepino Cuevas's head and what he did to Duran, you know, that was incredible stuff. And then I've got Joe Lewis there, you know, a thunderous right-hand puncher. I've got Alexis Arguello, obviously the explosive flip thin man. And then I've actually got David Hay for a bit of modern history at cruiserweight. He could bingo a lot of people, David Hay, and did.
I was there at ringside, Therese, and you probably were as well, when he beat Derek Chisora. My goodness, what a punch that was. Well, Chisora was doing quite well in that fight, and then David Hay hit him with an absolute thunderbolt of a punch.
Well, no one's done that to Chisora before or since. So, look, we're many years on, 10 plus years on from that, and think of all the big names Chisora's been in with, and no one starched him like that. So, yeah, good point.
What about Deontay Wilder? Does he get a mention here? Honourable or dishonourable?
Yeah, I think you've got to mention him just for the stats alone. But then I suppose there was another heavyweight back in the day, Mac Foster, who fought Ali. And I think he was about 30 wins and 6 losses. And all 30 wins were by knockout. And Wilder's probably of that ilk. I think Wilder his opposition bar Fury is questionable, isn't it?
Ernie Shavers is an interesting one, isn't he? I always remember that quote by, I think it was Larry Holmes, and somebody said after some other fight, did he hit as hard as Shavers? And Holmes's quote was memorable. He said, anyone hits as hard as Ernie Shavers, I'm going to shoot them.
So, well, we've got Julian Jackson winning that. And I by the way, as well, like, because I did the Boxing Life Stories episode with Julian Jackson relatively recently. And I was doing my research, and he's got, you know, you talk about that Azuma Nelson, Pat Galdell knockout, Ian. Well, Julian Jackson's got about 15 like that.
Yeah.
And some of them were early on Mike Tyson cards, where he's knocked out someone, absolutely sparked them out. In 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Las Vegas, you know, with hardly anyone in the crowd. And then he's obviously had defining nights like the Harold Graham one, where there were people there. But he made a proper highlight reel for himself. He's got a back catalogue that stands up against anybody else's, I'm sure.
It's terrifying, isn't it, really? And I think often with those punches, they don't quite know how they do it either. It just must be the way they mechanically throw the punch and the timing of it.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at them, you know, physically, look at the size and stature of Tyson, Naz, and Tommy Hearns, all extremely different shapes and sizes. But still, yes, there's certainly something. There's something to do with the X factor that you can't teach. And I don't think there's, you know, you can have all the PEDs in the world, but I don't think they will make you a puncher somehow. I just don't.
It's timing, isn't it? It's you know, you look at other sports, look at anything which involves, you know, whacking a ball. You get somebody like, for instance, Rory McIlroy, who's, I mean, he's only about my size, Rory McIlroy, but he hits the ball about 120, 140 yards further than I do. It's just, you know, how does somebody find that power? It's generating in the case of a golf club head speed. And in boxing, I guess it's sheer speed, coordination and precision with the fighter.
Yeah. I think you can't. For some of these guys, it's not coachable. I mean, some of these guys just go to the gym and chin people as amateurs, and they've got it from the start. So, anyway, let's move on to Hart now. And I've got a few runners and riders here of all sorts of backgrounds and statuses in terms of how far they got in the sport. But Ian, where are you with Hart?
So I've written down a little short list here, and I've written the word gut check as well, which is a phrase the Americans like to use about fighters coming through. Has he had a gut check yet? Well, we kind of call it heart, don't we? So top of my list is Evander Holyfield there, because he had that in bucketful, didn't he? Heart. You saw it, I think, lots of times when he was a cruiserweight, but most of all in that fight, that memorable fight with Riddick Bowe in Las Vegas, when he really exploded, I think, into the world's consciousness as a top operator. And, you know, he wasn't frightened about fighting Tyson. A lot of people were, caused the big upset there, et cetera, et cetera. So Holyfield, I think you've got to put Joe Frazier on the list as well. He just never knew when he was beaten, steaming forward the whole time, even when he was in serious danger of damaging himself in the, you know, the thriller in Manila, he still kept on chugging forward, throwing punches. So he's on my list as well. I think, you know, the man from the Raging Bull, Jake LaMotta, is there as well. All those fights with Sugar Ray Robinson. And here's one I'm going to throw in. Wouldn't be on most people's list, but if you talk about heart, how about Dennis Andres, who went from being a Cinderella fighter to becoming a world champion at light heavyweight? He was just made of metal, it seemed to me. Even when they put him in with Tommy Hearns in Detroit. So he's on my list too. But number one for me is Holyfield.
Rawley, we're in danger here of spilling into chin and mentality as well in terms of separate subcategories. But where are you with heart?
Well, I think you can, you've got to have Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward in any sort of discussion about heart, because you've got to, I mean, their three fights were just astonishing, and they wouldn't have been the fights they were without the sheer determination and will to win that both men had. I'd actually written down Dennis Andres as well. I saw a recent picture of Dennis. I'm not sure he wasn't there at the recent fight in at the old Wembley Arena with the Buatsi and Aziz. I think he might have actually been there for that. And I tell you what, for a man of 70, he still looks in great shape. He's going to give the aging process a real fight, as you'd expect from somebody as tough as him. I'd got Joe Frazier written down as well, and also, at risk of being a colossal bore, I have to go along with Ian with Evander. You know, I mean, Evander Holyfield, unquestionably, in my kind of career of reporting and commentating on boxing, Evander was one of my real favourite fighters, because he only stands about, what, 6'2", something like that. I mean, he'd been a cruiserweight. He'd come up. He never fought at more than about 210, 215 pounds, thereabouts. But he was always in amazing shape, and his sheer will to win. He was admirable, Evander Holyfield. And I think he has a fantastic resume, which has stood the test of time. I think everybody still really admires Evander Holyfield as a fighter. Great heart.
Well, I think it's going to be Holyfield. He's on my list. So we've got three votes for him. Also on my list, I've got Miguel Cotto, who rarely took a backward step unless it was tactical. I've got Joe Frazier as well. And Ian, it's not just obviously him meeting fire in Manila or the fight of the century, but him repeatedly getting up against Foreman after being bounced around like a basketball.
Yeah.
He showed incredible heart. I've got Gatti. I've got Harry Greb, who went through most of his life boxing with one eye. Rocky Marciano, who came through some terrible injuries, including having his nose half severed off against Ezard Charles. And he came through some real adversity to remain undefeated. I mean, my personal tip probably would have been through bias, Matthew Saad Mohammed, who had countless fights going to the well all the way through the late 70s and early 80s, made eight defenses of his world light heavyweight title, was in several Fight of the Year contenders and a couple of Fight of the Years. But obviously, I have to take my own heart out of the equation and go with my head. And that means jumping on the Holyfield train with you guys. But I mean, it's incredible. I mean, also let's not lose sight of this, that the very act of stepping through the ropes takes incredible heart. So to get into this rarefied air of what we're talking about, you know, the bravest of the brave, it's we're talking about a very special set of people here.
We are, and I think we should also just mention too, they're not going to be listed by name, but the hundreds of undercard fighters who put on spellbinding spectacles, you know, way below the main item on the agenda, that the top of the bill fight. You can turn up at 5:30 in the evening at the start of a show, and you can see an absolutely amazing scrap between a couple of little flyweights. So, you know, hats off to them as well. I mean, one name I will mention is, I mean, he was in fantastic value, went on to be a manager and trainer, Chris Sanagar. Remember him as Spicy Head with the likes of Rocky Kelly? You know, I mean, there's just one.
Yeah, of course. Right, so we're going to move on from showing heart to showing defense. And interesting this, because obviously defense and everything else has really evolved over the years, and we've seen some people, you know, the Philly Shell, you've got the duckers and divers from Detroit and Michigan. We've got people who would be criticized as runners, all sorts. John, where do you go with defense?
Well, I tell you where I'd start, actually, and he might actually be my selection as just somebody who made the most of the talent he had by being so incredibly difficult to nail cleanly. James Toney had a really good defensive approach. Okay, Roy Jones beat him when he was absolutely at the peak of his power, but not too many others found a way through. Floyd Mayweather clearly has a fantastic defense, as Larry Merchant once so memorably said. He's got the ability to suck the drama out of anything, and that's a reflection, I think, a grudging admiration, if you like, from Larry about Floyd Mayweather's defensive acumen. And another one who I'd have right up there, who sometimes gets overlooked, he was a terrific all-round fighter, great skill, great footwork, and particularly astonishing defense, Pernell Whitaker, Sweet Pea.
Good list. Ian, where are you? Have you
he's on my list as well, Pernell Whitaker. I think Floyd Mayweather's got to win this category, hasn't he? Because he was so good that I always used to say he was a great fighter who was never really in a great fight. And the reason he wasn't really in a great fight was because he never really let his opponents into the contest. He was that clever, that defensively masterful. And I suppose, too, his own power, though it didn't look like he was carrying a lot, I think his timing was such that he was hurting opponents with the economy of his punches as well. So many were landing. But defensively, yeah, he'd be up there, the master. Pernell Whitaker, a lot of people thought it was a little bit boring watching him, and I think it probably was. Same kind of thing. There were a lot of shutouts with him. I'd give an honourable mention to Joe Buckner in here, you know, as well, just to add to John's list.
So I've also got Willie Pep, who obviously, you know, famously people said has won a round without ever throwing a punch. I think that might be a myth, but I still like the line. there's the brilliant South American Nicolino Loche, who was a Hall of Famer, who was, you know, if you put up any videos of him, there's so many good defensive videos about him. He was a great mover and great stylist. I've got James Toney for the same reasons John mentioned. There's Winky Wright from a more recent past. You couldn't hit him with a handful of sand. Defensively as well, Bernard Hopkins was very astute, wasn't he? Hopkins knew his way around a ring as well as anyone. And going back to that old school nature, you'd have to have the likes of Archie Moore up there as well for their craft and how they fought. And then I suppose we couldn't not
But mention... we never saw them, did we? Not really.
No. But I think they're worth a mention, though. Certainly.
Worth a mention, sure, yeah.
And then you had, obviously, we've got the Four Kings, but people call them the Fifth King. And there was Wilfred Benitez, who people called El Radar because people couldn't hit him. He was obviously a tremendous defensive fighter as well. So it's tough, but I mean, Floyd's on all the lists. So I actually had Floyd on lockdown for another category, but he's been bumped up now to win the defensive stakes. So Floyd wins in terms of best defense. And I mean, it's a hard one to argue. By the way, though, Ian, I'll say this. I mean, he did have a couple of good fights. And I think people forget that because there were a lot of one-sided shutouts towards the end. His fight with Diego Corrales was a great contest, and he was head and shoulders above Corrales. But then even later on, he had a pretty bloody and memorable pair of fights. Firstly, with Miguel Cotto, and then the first fight in particular with Marcus Maidana, who really sort of gave him a tough fight. So there were a couple there where he was hurt, and Mosley had a rock and a rolling in the second round of their fight as well. And I think Pacquiao hurt him early as well, but which is one of the reasons why Floyd actually is in my next category. He's in the category, but not the winner for it, but it's chin. And I've put Floyd in there because he was only ever down once, and that was when he hurt his hand, I think, against Carlos Hernandez. He was in so much pain, he actually went to the floor.
Can I just name it before we finish with the other category? James Toney got a lot of mentions. I used to love watching him fight when he was in the mood, which wasn't always the case, but he could be quite a difficult guy. And he didn't like Jim Gray, the guy who did the interviews in America in the ring. And I remember famously after one of the fights, Jim Gray starts his interview saying, "How did things go from your perspective?" Trying to ask a pretty open, not offensive question. And Tony said, "Do you know what? I'm already sick of your dumbass questions," and knocked the microphone out of his hand. And that was the end of the interview.
Hey, by the way, just on that, talking about guys who went up in weight from those sort of weights to heavyweight, I've just done a Boxing Life Stories with Michael Mora, and he was obviously known for being a bit of a bad dude back in the day, and he was actually really interesting, really engaging, and we only had a couple of crosswords, and I was very, very surprised. He's in good health and all the rest of it, and it was good to catch up with him.
I look forward to hearing
that one.
I know when we were over there covering Mora fights, you know, I mean, he was one of the most difficult people that you'd ever meet. And he just didn't want to play the media game one bit. And he could be thoroughly unpleasant, couldn't he, Ian?
He could. I remember going to a press conference with Michael Mora, and we all sat there, and he wandered in a pair of jeans and put his feet on the table, and nobody said anything. We all just sat there for about a minute, nobody speaking or introducing the whole thing. And eventually, Mora looked up, pulled out a packet of mints from his pocket and said, "Anybody want a mint?"
I mean, he was great. I mean, I asked, I talked about his moods and him being mean Michael and stuff. And he was fully accepting that he was a nightmare to deal with back in the day. He was very, and you know, he almost embraced it, the fact that he'd moved on so much. So very good stuff. Anyway, so we move on now to chin. I'll kick this one off. I've got a list of five here. Obviously, I mentioned Floyd. I've put Aaron Pryor on. It was very hard to deter Aaron Pryor. He walked through a lot of blows to let his own go. Jake LaMotta, who obviously, you know, the immortal line from the movie, "You never put me down, Ray," talking about the Ray Robinson fight. I've got Azuma Nelson. I mean, I don't know, that's maybe selling him short, just putting him in as a chin. And then, of course, the immovable object that was George Chavalo.
Yeah, I've got him on the list too, yeah.
Ian, who else have you got?
All right, I've written down Rocky Marciano. I mean, you said there's a little bit of overlap here, but he had a kind of indestructible quality about him and took all kinds of punishment without ever hitting the deck. I've got Ali. I think Ali's chin was fantastic. That's a kind of underrated quality of Muhammad Ali and made him prevail. I mean, who else could have tried what he did, you know, in the Rumble in the Jungle, laying on the ropes, taking those punches from Foreman and then prevailing himself. So I've got him on the list. I've got Chris Eubank on the list. And I'll give you another old heavyweight who fought Ali, Oscar Bonavina, the Argentinian. He had a granite chin too, didn't he?
By the way, it seems only apt here, And seeing as you mentioned Ali in the chin categories, remember, I think it was Dr. Ferdy Pacheco who said, you know, when Ali came back, he found out one of the best and worst things about his quality as a fighter, and that was that he had a good chin. And it was great because he knew he could take a shot, but it was bad because he relied on it and used it.
Yeah. Yeah, he needed that chin in the second phase of his career, didn't he? When he'd lost a bit of the speed.
I found a great quote from Joe Frazier about Ali, because I'd got Ali on my list as well. And Joe apparently once said, "Man, I hit him with punches that would have brought down the walls of a city."
Yeah.
And he said that's how good his chin was. I've got Oliver McCall on my list.
He was absolutely
granite chinned. Jake LaMotta, obviously, down, what was it, once in 106 fights. I think you could put Gennady Golovkin on the list. Never down as an amateur. Okay, a different level, obviously, but then as a pro, you know, very, 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 very durable. But the number one, I think we've all come up with it, George Shivalo. You know, he fought everybody and was never down. Ali, Frazier, Foreman, they just couldn't stop him. And somebody once said of him, if boxing matches had been 50 rounds, George Shivalo would have been world champion, because he would have just kept going on and on and on. Sadly, the fella's paying maybe the price now. He's 86 years old, in a nursing home and suffering with dementia, but what a brave man he was.
Interesting stuff. Okay, so we'll go with...
Sad to hear that. Yeah. Sad to hear.
So we'll go to mentality now. Ian, let's kick off with you in terms of mentality. And I suppose just to be clear here, I mean, this could be anything in terms of...
Yeah.
Being able to carry out a game plan, being strategic, being disciplined, being determined. All of the above.
Yeah, and you could write a list probably 100 long, because fighters have this in their DNA, don't they? That huge mental strength to keep on going when everything seems to be going wrong. But we'll pick out a few for this conversation. My number one would be Marvin Hagler here, who reigned for 7 years as world middleweight champion and always looked as hungry as a champion as he was when he was the challenger. He used to go into that monastic training regime, running along the beaches at Cape Cod, uttering to himself, destruction and destroy. He was very single-minded. He wouldn't talk to any of us in the week of a fight. There was nothing anybody could do around him, Bob Arum, the Petronelli brothers, to get him to talk to us. And that was because his mind was so strong and so focused on what he was about to do in the ring. He'd been sidetracked and ignored for so long, and he was in the kind of like who needs him club, so nobody wanted to really give him that break, but his talent got him there in the end. And he was a great middleweight champion, so he'd be my pick. But you know, you'd have to add people, you know, from that old era when fighters were fighting almost every week, like people like Ted Kidd Lewis and Jimmy Wilde going way back, you know, Jack Johnson, who had the, you know, that ability as world heavyweight champion to reign amid this rampant racism of the time. He was way ahead of his time. You know, you can add to this list. There are a lot of fighters who deserve to be on it, but my pick is Hagler.
John, where are you?
Well, Hagler would be on my list as well, although he's not the one I kind of put down as the principal one. I mean, we had Lennox Lewis as a jab, didn't we? But I think Lennox Lewis's mindset and mentality was pretty impressive as well. He didn't get dragged into phony publicity through wars of words, and he withstood some pretty awful taunting and attempts to undermine him coming from Don King. But I tell you, somebody more recently who I admire hugely for his mentality as a fighter. I don't think he's the most gifted fighter, although he's earned huge amounts of money and had, I think he had something like 11 world title fights. But I always admired the mentality of Karl Froch. There's a strength about Karl that is so impressive. He's fought better fighters like Ward, for instance, and he went in against Kessler, who may very well have been better. But you know, Froch actually as a mindset, his mentality, his warrior mentality, I always thought was extraordinary, and he'd be my choice.
Yeah, so I tell you what, I'll just pick you up on one there, John. I wouldn't put Lennox Lewis, I thought about that, on this list in this category, as superb a fighter as he was, because of what happened in the first fight with Hasim Rahman, where he took his eyes off the ball, took it lightly, went off around the film set of Ocean's 11, and ended up losing his title. I mean, he put it right in the rematch, but yeah, maybe we should forgive him for that. But if we're doing an elite list in this category, he wouldn't be in that one for me, just for that reason.
Yeah, fair points.
Well, I've got to say, guys, I mean, I can sort of split the difference there in the sense that I mentioned both yours and I picked Hagler based on the reason that you said, Ian. I mean, Lennox took his foot off the gas once. I don't think Hagler did it at all. And, you know, Hagler, you know, I don't think he did it until the day he died. He kept that intensity and he stayed in shape and everything else. So, I mean, when it comes to mentality as well, I do think about Evander Holyfield before the Tyson fights and thinking how bulletproof he was mentally, you know, with his, you know, reciting the Bible and singing and everything else. You know, nothing was getting to him at all, was he? And then sometimes I remember just seeing sometimes, you know, when Manny Pacquiao's walked to the ring and you see him sort of singing and high-fiving the crowd, you're like, how can someone look so happy and relaxed when they're basically walking to the modern day gallows? It always staggered me that he was able to do that and look that way. And Manny was obviously a terrifically brave fighter as well and always showed up. I did have Lennox just because I think once he got over that Hasim Rahman bump, he did learn from it and he did become a much more rounded boxer and he did realize what it was going to take to win the title and hold on to it. I've got the second coming of George Foreman on my list in the sense that he could poke fun at himself and almost made him a constant underdog, which made him more relaxed. And I think he was too uptight the first time around, maybe too much pressure. And obviously, inevitably, he cracked a couple of times under that pressure against Muhammad Ali and then Jimmy Young. To add to mentality, I've got Nigel Benn, you know, guy went to America to duff up the Americans and then invited McClellan over to the Lion's Den here. And, you know, I've got Vitali Klitschko on my list as well. He was as tough as nails. And look what he's gone on to do now with Ukraine and Russia. I know it's a very different subject, but it's just, you know, he's a guy who seems to be almost bulletproof, Vitali, probably a bad choice of words. And then I've got Mickey Ward. And I know, John, you mentioned him earlier. You got Mickey Ward, who still works as a paver, you know, doing the roads and stuff now, and did all the way through his career, headlining on HBO against Gatti. They make a movie of his life and he's still out there doing his 9-to-5 because he's a grafter. You know, but to cut a long story short, though, it's got to be Hagler, the guy who embraced the hardship of fighting and being a fighting man. And like you said, freezing cold in Cape Cod, isolating himself, making him live such a hard, stringent lifestyle so the fight was always easier. How, you know, just incredible stuff.
You mentioned Vitali Klitschko there. I mean, I just while I think about it, there was one little Vitali story, and I always admired him. I think he was definitely of the two brothers. He may not have been the better boxer, but I think he was the harder man. And I remember when Vladimir fought David Hay over in Hamburg, it was a filthy night, chucking it down. And the crowd, of course, a lot of British fans had gone over. They were giving it plenty. There was a lot of abuse flying out towards the Klitschkos. And I remember Vladimir standing on the ring apron, just staring at these British fans. And you sort of thought, I strongly suspect that every if he'd had every one of them one after another, he'd beaten virtually the entire stadium. I think he is a very tough man, and I think what he's done as well after his boxing career, you can only admire it.
Yeah, I mean, you think of Chris Eubank, what that scene you just described, John, standing in front of all the German fans when he fought Graziano Rocchigiani in Berlin, and they wanted his blood, and he stood there and just tapping his gloves in front of them and defying them and putting on one of the great performances of his career to win away from home. So Chris Eubank's mentality was strong too, but it's quite a long list we've got here. But
hey,
we're coming out on Hagler, aren't we?
Yeah, yes, yeah. But let me add something there, because what it's only worth mentioning now. You mentioned Eubank. When you talk about mentality, look at Steve Collins. He put the cat among the pigeons with Eubank's mentality, didn't he? But also, Steve Collins was a blue-collar warrior, wasn't he? Honest as the day is long. And he's another guy that could either have gone in the chin or mentality column.
Yeah, he's another one on the list. It's a long list, this one.
Yeah. Okay, let's switch up to charisma. And John, let's kick off with you and charisma.
Well, Muhammad Ali, I think he's pretty much in a different level when it comes to charisma. He was voted the sports personality of the 20th century on one of the sports personality of the year shows. And I don't think there'd be too many people who'd argue about that. His performance as in interviews, not only in the ring, but as a chat show guest, he was phenomenal. Astonishingly charismatic man. More recently, I guess you're looking at blue collar heroes again. I suppose Ricky Hatton had amazing charisma and enthused a nation, but by a distance, head and shoulders for me, Muhammad Ali.
Ian?
Yeah, he wins this category, doesn't he? I mean, he's got to win one of the categories. He's involved in the conversation on just about all of them, but I think he has to have this one. He's the ultimate marquee fighter. I remember as a little boy, you know, when I was getting interested in boxing, waking up in the middle of the night, or sometimes when my mum and dad wouldn't let me wake up in the middle of the night, getting up in the morning, and the first thing I wanted to know was how his fight had ended overnight, and being pretty heartbroken when he lost for the first time to Joe Frazier in that fight of the century. Just as John said, he had charm, that twinkle in his eye, and he really invented the modern way of selling fights with all the hoopla beforehand. Some people have tried to imitate it, and a lot of them have imitated it pretty badly, if we're honest with you. But he is an absolute global superstar. So he's in there. I mean, more modern, you'd have to say, you know, AJ's selling all those tickets in recent years, has become a big star in Britain, maybe not globally. Fury, likewise, as well. Mike Tyson in his prime was fantastic marquee value, wasn't he? I mean, in a different kind of way, that baddest man on the planet thing. And if you want to go back, Jack Dempsey and Joe Louis in their eras were absolutely world-renowned figures. But it has to be Muhammad Ali, doesn't it, this one?
Yeah, well, you mentioned there, obviously, the darkness side of charisma, and I think that's very relevant. And I mean, I put Duran in here as well because, you know, he had charisma, but it wasn't always in the vibrant way that we see Duran today. Also, I've got Jack Johnson in here, you know, charismatic champ, you know, fought against the grain in every way, shape and form. Dempsey, like you know, married the actress. Estelle Taylor was a sign of the Roaring Twenties. I've got Bruno in here for charisma, just as a footnote, should we say. Hector Camacho loved doing the showman stuff, didn't he? And Eubank too, and Naz. But again, a different side of charisma. Charisma doesn't always have to be the same sort of vibrancy and that you have with a Manny Pacquiao, who I know I'm mentioning again here, but very charismatic guy, Manny, who didn't have a complete grasp of the English language, but somehow people still just were magnetized by him, and he's obviously inspired millions and millions, not just in the Philippines, but around the world. But you can't really go away from Ali there. And although he's going to come up now, I'm sure, because we're going into the territory of speed. for which I've got Ali, I've got Amir Khan, who's probably got the fastest hands of anyone I've ever seen. Roy Jones, Joe Calzaghe. I've got Shane Mosley, who had blistering hand speed, particularly as a lightweight. And Floyd Patterson, who actually, I remember George Shivalo telling me over coffee in Toronto once, that Floyd Patterson had this left hook that could tear your brains out, Shivalo said. And it was a leaping left hook. And it was so quick. He would launch himself out from that peekaboo crouch that Customato taught him. And he could fly halfway across the ring and nail you with this left hook that no one saw coming, even though it was actually coming from a mile away.
Didn't he win the Olympic gold medal at middleweight?
Yes. Yeah.
World heavyweight champion. He did have fantastic speed. That's a great call, Tris.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, obviously people just remember the doom and gloom of the two Liston fights, but he was so much more than that. And I mean, I mentioned that Shivalo fight. Him and Shivalo actually shared such a battle, which when you talk about blistering hand speed against the immovable object, George Shivalo, it was a fight of the year. It was literally the fight of the year. But I think we just passed the anniversary for it. Anyone who hasn't seen it, pop it on YouTube, and it's an almighty war. But yeah, hand speed, I suppose. I mean, Khan being the fastest I've seen, but very hard to pick against Roy Jones, who can put his hands behind his back and still knock someone out before they see the punch coming.
Yeah, blurring hand speed, I used to call it on the commentary. Could never think of a better word. I tried to, but Roy Jones had that. I mean, my list is Joe Calzaghe on hand speed, which was a huge asset for him right the way through that unbeaten career. I think you've got to put Sugar Ray Leonard in there as well, the way he could throw about a dozen punches in a split second, or it looked like that anyway. The young Ali, when we were calling him Cassius Clay, you know, around the time of the, well, he was Muhammad Ali by then, but, you know, you think of the Cleveland Williams fight, you know, probably his best ever performance. He was speed personified. Even Tyson, you know, at his peak, he didn't only have the power, he had the speed to get across the ring and pounce on you like you'd got in the ring with a tiger. So that's my short list there. But I think I'm with you, Tris. Roy Jones would edge that on sheer speed.
Yeah, I mean, let's just add to that reflexes. I mean, it was like you said about Tyson being like a tiger. I mean, Roy is like a cat. His reflexes defensively as well were just extraordinary.
You've got everybody who's on my list there. I'd written down early Ali, Amir, Joe Calzaghe, hand speed and work. Bomber Graham, I suppose, had great reflexes and great speed. But my number one, absolutely, definitely, and unfortunately, you know, with Roy Jones, his legacy has been tarnished just a little bit by the fact that he went on too long. In his prime, he was awesome. Speed, reflexes, timing. I think he was the best fighter that I've actually seen live at ringside in the time I've been covering the sport. I think Roy Jones was phenomenal.
Yeah. I thought Sugar Ray Leonard was phenomenal as well. I mean, being around him, he was incredible. Roy Jones wasn't liked by Larry Merchant, was he? At HBO. Do you remember that interview when Roy Jones is talking and he's saying, you've got to remember, Larry, you know, when Roy Jones throws a punch, nobody can see it coming. Roy Jones is the fastest boxer there's ever been. Roy Jones has got more skills than anybody's ever seen. And Merchant says to him, when you talk about Roy Jones, you mean you, don't you? it's a wicked response.
That's a serious put down.
It is. He didn't like him.
By the way, John, I like what you said there in terms of Calzaghe, because you did mention the speed, but his work, I mean, he's probably the only guy out of that who was really a volume puncher as well. Like when he had someone on the ropes, it was an amazing thing to watch. Calzaghe with his bursts of punches, wasn't it? It was an amazing thing to see. You know, you couldn't keep up with it. I mean, you guys, poor you guys calling the fight. Poor me trying to scribble down his combinations at ringside for a ringside report. You couldn't keep up. It was astonishing.
I think absolutely, you know, the guy, when he's absolutely at the top of his game, Joe Calzaghe, he'd have been a very, very hard man to beat by anybody in his weight division in the entire history of the sport. I mean, Joe Calzaghe was very, very good.
Yeah. I've got a section here now. I've got footwork in here, and I'm not sure if you guys are prepped for this, but I mean, I can lead the way. Manny Pacquiao, who I don't think he's won a category yet, but I remember seeing him in Texas ahead of his fight with Joshua Clotty, and he was on the pads with Freddie Roach. And it was just amazing to see Pacquiao. He could skip in and out to fire off his combinations, almost like he was levitating. He was almost hovering across the ring, and he was so quick in and out, always in at different angles and pivoting off one way and the next. And he could obviously do that in the fights, and he did do that when he gave Oscar De La Hoya absolute nightmares, when he really, really pulled the curtain down on Oscar's career. So I've got Manny in there. Obviously, you know, Muhammad Ali, the shuffle, the movement, everything else, but we can't have Ali because he's already won an award. I've got the likes of Marquez and Gene Tunney for almost ring generalship, in terms of they never really fought anywhere they didn't want to fight in terms of ring territory and where the fights were engaged. But I suppose I've got to go with Ray Robinson because he's not won another category yet.
He's got to win one, hasn't he? But Sugar Ray Leonard hasn't won one either.
No, but we're down to footwork and stylist as the last two categories. And I think footwork, and it might be because I've seen so many pictures of Sugar Ray Robinson dancing in his own nightclub. But Robinson was so rounded, he could do everything, couldn't he? And I suppose when you look at footwork, you're not just talking about getting out of the way. You're looking at getting in the proper position to punch. And, you know, you think of fights that he had where maybe he doesn't get the credit he deserves, you know, from the knockout of Gene Fulmer to being inside with someone like Gene Fulmer, who'd never been stopped and was basically indestructible. And Ray Robinson could find the distance and the time and be in the right area at the right time to detonate that left hook, which, by the way, obviously all came from the feet and stabbing his feet into the floor, pivoting correctly and letting the shot go, which, by the way, Gene Fulmer told me over coffee in his house once. He said, "I was very proud of that fight. Ring Magazine called it the greatest knockout of the century, and I was on the other end of it."
Is there any fighter you haven't met yet now, Tritz? It seems to me you've interviewed the entire world of boxing history.
I've put in some graphs.
You have. I've put in some graphs. Really have.
I'm
not going to argue. Sugar Ray Robinson, you know, five-time world middleweight champion, fantastic welterweight. Any conversation about best pound for pound, he's in it. And so I reckon he's got to win one of our categories. So let's give him this one.
I'd go along with that. I mean, I've got just thinking off the top of my head. I think any great fighter has got great footwork, haven't they? You know, and sometimes it's people underestimate some of those whose trademarks are in different areas. I mean, think for instance of Roberto Duran. I think he had terrific feet. And I tell you what as well, I once saw him skipping rope. I've never seen anybody skip rope more dramatically and sensationally than Roberto Duran. Sugar Ray Leonard, great footwork, of course. Ali. But yeah, I'd go with Robinson. Amazing career. And we can't have a program such as this without having Sugar Ray Robinson winning something. So I'll give it him.
Yeah, great stuff. By the way, just talking about footwork, it's worth noting here, obviously, I know we've mentioned Bomber Graham. Some of the styles, including the Sheffield style, the famous Ingalls style, it starts with the feet. I mean, most boxing should. But obviously, you've got the famous lines there and the circles. Everything comes off the footwork. And so, I mean, obviously, people talk about the bells and whistles of the knockout punch and, you know, all the stuff that looks great. But so much of the nitty gritty is down to the feet, isn't it?
And yeah, I mean, you can have a great punch, but if you can't get in a position to land it, if your footwork's not good enough, it's going to be pretty useless to you. And I think we've seen that a couple of times, haven't we, with Wilder. He doesn't really have the skill set. He just has that punch. And at the very, very top level, I think he's been found out a couple of times because he doesn't have that.
And the same thing defensively. If you're, you can have the best balance of the in the world, but if your feet are wrong and you get caught, then you're over. So, okay, we're down to stylist now. So, Ian, who have you got on your list as the best stylist? This is the final category.
Tight one. Roy Jones has to be in the conversation. Oscar De La Hoya, I've got. I've also put Tony because I just loved the liquid movement of watching him fight when he was at his best. But for me, the best pound-for-pound fighter I ever saw in my time commentating on boxing was Sugar Ray Leonard, when I think about it. And I'm going to have him as my pick here.
British fighter who I think, well, it was his nickname, wasn't it? And he was a lovely boxer to watch. And such a shame his career was cut short through injury. Colin McMillan. He was a beautifully, beautifully sweet, skilled fighter. I mentioned Pernell Whitaker earlier on, and he's another one who was just wonderfully coordinated and really didn't have a weakness. But I'd go along with Ian. The best overall has to be Sugar Ray Leonard, who I think in our lifetime, okay, Muhammad Ali, the most charismatic, the biggest star, but actually the greatest fighter we've seen, I think it has to be Sugar Ray Leonard.
Interesting. So I've also got Ali on my list, obviously. I've got Whitaker. I have Whitaker as stylist rather than defense, just because, again, if it's another one, if you go back and look at some highlight reels, Whitaker had some great fights and chilled a few people, knocked some people out cold, and he was more aggressive than people give him credit for. I've got Floyd as a stylist in here, and obviously there are a couple of versions, a more aggressive Floyd from the noughties to the more cultured Money Mayweather later on. I've got Salvador Sanchez, a great Mexican who died too early, and I've got Andre Ward in here, who could do a bit of everything. He could mix it up, get tough and make it ugly, win ugly, be physical, but he also had infinite skills. But, yeah. I mean, how can you go against Sugar Ray Leonard, which is, it's impossible. When you talk about style, he oozed style, didn't he? Whether it was in press conferences, whether it was in the ring, whatever. He basically was synonymous with the word, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was exceptional. He was the complete package, wasn't he?
He was an egotist, and he would admit he was an egotist as well. I remember interviewing him once and saying to him, "Why are you carrying on with this business? You've made so many millions of dollars. What is it? Ego? Glamour?" He said, "Yeah, both of those."
Oh, great. So our final list looks like this. For Jab, it's the only split decision. We've got Lennox, we've got Larry Holmes, and we've got Sonny Liston. Three very different jabs, by the way. You got Lennox more cultured with his ones and twos, Larry with that sort of whipping left jab, and Liston with his battering ram jab. Very hard to pick, you know, to pick a winner out of those three. But power, we've got Julian Jackson. Heart, we've got Evander Holyfield. Defense, we've got Floyd Mayweather. Chin, we've got George Chavallo. Mentality, we've got Marvin Hagler. Charisma, we've got Muhammad Ali. Speed, we've got Roy Jones. Footwork, we've got Sugar Ray Robinson. And as a stylist, we've got Sugar Ray Leonard. That is a hell of a fighter. What are you calling him, Ian?
I wrote it down somewhere and I can't remember what I said. Oh, hang on a minute. Coming up, Faultless Freddy Fantastic. That's pretty pathetic, isn't it, actually, now I think about it. But he would be invincible. That fighter would never, ever be beaten. And might sell a ticket or two. I might turn on to watch. Put him in with?
God, yeah. I don't know. So, yeah, I don't know.
Not one of those YouTubers, I don't think.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, we'd do some views anyway. Gents, that was great. That was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. There was plenty of food for thought in there. Some good personal anecdotes and all sorts. Very varied. I don't know if we could do one of the worst.
that would be tough, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah. But no, it was good. Loads of food for thought. And obviously, I mean, you could do a UK one as well. But I think that's a hell of a fighter we've just created there. There's not a chink in that armor anywhere.
Who's going to train him?
You'll find out next week on Ringside Rewind.
Keep tuning in, everybody. We can keep this going for years.
Yeah. No, guys, look, thank you so much for joining us this week. That's all from me, Tris Dixon, Ian Dark, John Rawling, and we'll be back soon.
Hi, I'm John Rawling, welcoming you to Ringside Rewind, where I'm joined by Tris Dixon and Ian Dark. And we're grateful for sponsorship from Fleet UK, a car and commercial vehicle leasing company based in Hampshire, supporting our programme. Great people who've supplied customers for 20 years or more, including me. Wherever you are, they'll find and supply any car you want and work out financing options to best suit your needs. Fleet UK pride themselves on transparency, trust and fairness in every deal. And you can take it from me, they are brilliant at what they do. Just have a look and check them out at fleetuk.com.